Growing businesses and finance professionals, you need Bill Spend and Expense, the free-to-use spend management software. It's powered by the Bill Divvy Corporate Card, which helps growing companies scale with credit lines of $500 to $15 million, automated expense reports, and as many virtual cards as you need. For a limited time, get $500 when you get started with Bill Spend and Expense. Request a demo at bill.com/get500. Terms and conditions apply. Advertised credit ranges are not guaranteed and are determined at approval. Card issued by Cross River Bank, member FDIC.
Good evening, traveler, and welcome to the Penumbra. Tonight's tale is Juno Steel and the Thief's Honor.
Quiet, please! Everyone, can we have some quiet, please? Thank you. Now, thank you all for meeting us here at this time. Nobody wants to have to make a decision like this. Believe me, I don't. But our hands are being forced and...
Can we skip the preamble and get right to the vote? I don't think any of us want to drag this out any more than we have to.
That's right. It's not going to be safe in here forever or even for much longer. The boss's digging machines and the patrols of those life-up workers keep getting closer. We won't be hidden for long.
Okay, well, Mystery Man, whatever your name is there anything you want to say before we start the vote?
You know that if I had my way, there wouldn't be a vote at all.
That's right. We've worked so hard and for so long. Are we really going to put all those years up to a vote? I don't know if I can take it.
I understand, but we're out of time. We need to do something before the bosses catch us, and unless we all do it together, those life-up workers are going to take us out. I know this isn't fair. I know how awful it is. But either we all work together, or we die. And that means some of us are going to be unhappy. But I think we'd all rather be unhappy than dead and brought back as one of those workers. So, to summarize the situation, we have a choice to make. It sounds like we generally agree that the life of workers are gone. But not all of our loved ones were completely dead, and we haven't seen any of the ones that were being kept on life support. Mr. Sorzi said that they were holding some of them back for a special project. So we have to decide. Are we going to try and take them with us when we escape from here?
At least say what you're really asking. Finding a way off this ball of trash without the bosses stopping us is already going to be impossible. Saving 40-odd people and their life support machinery is suicide.
But that's why we're all here in the first place, right? To save them? We're really just gonna leave them behind and let the bosses turn them into who knows what?
Then we can find a way to shut down their life support before we go. But taking them with us is a pipe dream.
I would remind everyone that the patients are not the only ones who need rescuing.
That's right. There's Juno as well.
But it's already taken us so long to figure out where the bosses are keeping their transports. Are we really going to take the time to save one person? We'd be risking every one of our lives.
Lives you likely wouldn't have without him. If Juno hadn't determined that the life-up workers are commanded by the lights, you never would have escaped Vivopolis to begin with.
And we're grateful for that. But if he wanted to save us that badly then, he'd understand why we can't kill ourselves trying to save him now.
We should vote now, before we pressure anyone into one side or another. And whatever the results are, we all have to agree to stick to them. Otherwise, we might as well hand ourselves over to the bosses now. Agreed?
Yes.
Sure.
All right. All in favor of rescuing Juno and the remaining patients?
Aye.
And those for finding a way to shut down the patients, but leave them and Juno behind.
Aye.
All right, then. It looks like we've decided to save ourselves. Hey, Mystery Man, where are you going? Come on, wait up!
It's tough on the mind to try and tell what's going on in two places at once at the best of times. But I reached with my mind, or the Ruby's mind, or minds, I guess, to try to sniff out what Nureyev was feeling. He wasn't happy, that was for sure. There was a rebellious streak running through him, a feeling of angry, discontented action. But what the hell that action was, I couldn't tell. Maybe I could have figured it out given enough time, but the executives weren't so big on giving things away for free, time included.
Juno Steel, the time has come for your next examination.
Hold on a minute, I'm busy.
Ah, as there is nothing for you to do in your cell, and you therefore cannot be busy, I conclude that this is humor. Terrible for profits. Time wasted is money wasted. Firing Stunner now.
Hey, what gives? I was watching that.
Come with me, Juno Steel, or it will get much worse for you than that.
You execs sure know how to sweeten a deal. All right, Doc, I'm ready for my appointment.
Much more professional. This way, please.
I felt what was left of the Ruby 7 slip deeper into my pocket as I took my first stumbling steps after the executive. And at the same time, on the far edges of my mind, I felt the other half of the Ruby 7 as it slipped deeper in Nureyev's pocket. Its motions, the mirror image of my half. Fitting my thoughts around the rubies had always been hard to begin with. Now, with it stretched across two places like this, I felt ready to tear in two. My name is Juno Steel, and I'm pretty sure I'm human. Well, mostly human at least. But the closer me and the ruby get, and the more those executives tell me about what they're finding in my blood, the less certain of that I become. But maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. About a week had passed since the execs bagged me outside of Avopolis and ripped the ruby in half. And for a few days, I thought that was it. Bye-bye, Ruby 7. Bye-bye to my only ride off this trash ball. And most of all, bye-bye life. And then things started getting weird. At first, I thought it was side effects from the executives' tests on me, because, hell, there sure were a lot of those, and not one of them felt nice. But then I started hearing things.
What remains of the vehicle that brought us here? A sort of alien life form.
But is it even alive?
I don't know. But I can feel it moving. I'll hold on to it just in case.
Being split in two by that stun net hadn't killed the Ruby 7, although it had come pretty close. And the two halves of the Ruby were still connected mentally. And because the ruby was mentally connected to me, that meant I was connected to both halves, too. I could still see and hear and sense everything going on by the other half of the Ruby 7, which meant I could follow Nureyev. I could sniff out his feelings like the ruby did. I could watch as the survivors of Avopolis voted to leave me for dead in this ball of space trash. And that connection was feeling stronger than ever. If anything, it felt like the ruby was pulling harder on my mind, taking deeper and deeper sips of it. Somewhere in the confusing haze of its alien thoughts and emotions, I thought I could sense that it needed our connection. That resting on my mind was the only thing keeping it alive. So I let it in. And in return, I was getting a hell of a show. It would have been overwhelming enough if the Ruby's theater of the mind was the only thing I had to pay attention to, but of course, nothing's ever that easy. The executives had a hell of a lot of tests they wanted to run on me, and they were very excited about what they were finding. Chatty, too, which wasn't a good sign. In my experience, when your captors don't worry too much about what they say in front of you, that usually means they aren't planning on keeping you alive for long enough for you to spill the secrets.
Fascinating.
Not every day somebody says that about your blood.
It isn't every day one comes across blood with such a composition. Tell me again how you managed this.
I ate a strange pill off the ground. In my defense, my mother never taught me not to.
Ah, yes. The Lasoniana capsule.
We were searching for that for a time. The anthropologist was difficult to contend with, however, and we've long suspected that your friend, Mr. Nureyev, may have had a conflict of interest there.
Hey, what's it to you what's in my blood anyway? That seems like nobody's business but mine.
Business is exactly the reason. Medical marvels are profit, and profit is the lifeblood of business. You have managed, in the laboratory of your veins, a feat that we have not been able to replicate with millions of creds. You have given a human body the ability to interface with alien biology. We've never seen anything like it.
Interface? What the hell does that mean?
The way you communicate with that alien life form you brought here. It goes beyond language. You seem nearly... Perhaps I should file a self-reprimand for such inexact language, but it seems nearly psychic in nature. You seem surprised. But of course we saw you communicating with it. The first time our guard stun-netted you and it tried to escape your pocket, for example. There was a camera present, and more information was clearly exchanged between the two of you than your words would have suggested. If you have managed a mental link between yourself and a life form that did not originate on old Earth, did not originate in this galaxy, then you have managed a connection no recorded human has achieved.
So the executives didn't know everything, at least. If they'd known what Miasma managed to pull off in the final moments before Nureyev and I killed her, hell, I'd be small potatoes. Not that knowing what they did and didn't did me any good. It's like an old habit. Asking questions, finding answers. I probably wouldn't learn anything that would help me get out of here alive, but hell, I could dream, couldn't I? So, I gathered what information I could from the two sources I had. The executives pumping me for blood and the Ruby 7 pumping me for brainwaves, or whatever the hell I needed. The latter was complicated. So let's start with the executives. Or executive, actually. Despite looking and sounding the same, it became clear pretty quick that the executives each had their specialties, and Mr. Fenshin was the R&D alien blood guy. And Fenshin was really excited about Life Up as a project, as the future of profit-first business. He had a lot to say about their plans for them. And for me.
The Life Up workers you've seen are what we refer to as Tier 1 workers. Those capable of menial labor and menial tasks, but not much else. In truth, we've had the technology to create such workers for some time, but they always fell apart too quickly to do any truly profitable labor. Grandpappy's recipe changed all that, of course. But even now, in the modern world, menial labor can only bring in so many creds. The real veins of profit lie in what we call brain work. Analytical and creative thought, problem solving, focus, and so on. The true purpose of our project has always been to revivify brain workers, what we now call Tier 2 Life Up workers. That's what we need your blood for.
What's my blood got to do with it?
If you've worked with Lawrence Hoffman, like our research suggests, you should know the answer to that already.
That crazy old coot with the bird. Right. He said something about the revivification tech all being based around some miracle microbe they found in the Outer Rim, right?
Very good. Exactly right. Perhaps we'll make you a Tier 2 brain worker yourself. A good mind is a terrible thing to waste. We know very little other than that microbe is not originally from our galaxy. That happens from time to time. Viruses or panaceas accidentally ride a cross-galactic asteroid that crashes down somewhere in the Outer Rim, and we eventually find the ones that survive.
One of the harder parts of sharing a mind with the Ruby 7 was moments like this. You know how sometimes someone will say something that reminds you of your past, and you'll miss the next 5 minutes of what they're saying because you're spinning off into your own thoughts somewhere? Try that when there are two of you to go spinning. Because something that executive said about that cross-galactic asteroid hit a nerve in the Ruby I couldn't quite understand. And all of a sudden I was there with it, somewhere long in the past. It felt small, cold, vulnerable, and more than anything else, alone. The memory was from far back, too. further than I could feel my own mind capable of reaching. And for the first time, I wondered just how old the Ruby Seven was. A mind like that seemed to stretch back to forever. There was a longing in its mind I didn't understand yet either, but it felt familiar all the same. A stretching, straining feeling, a despair reaching backwards. I'd figure it out eventually. But right then, trying to follow the Ruby's strange memory and Fenchin's lecture simultaneously, I wasn't doing either particularly well.
But by virtue of being from so far away, from another evolutionary lineage entirely, sometimes defying the essential definitions of life we've constructed by only viewing Milky Way specimens, it is difficult for our biologies to interface successfully with theirs. Some form of link is needed. And we believe the ancient Martian material in your blood is adaptable enough to be such a link. Perhaps they came from another galaxy originally as well. We'll never know, with all of them gone. Mr. Steele, is everything all right?
Yeah, fine. Just got the willies for a second there.
Willies? Fascinating. We'll have to test for those.
But if the brain workers are the prophets you're really looking for, why bother bringing back the ones you already have as tier one workers?
The brain is a remarkably complex and delicate organ. After only a relatively minor amount of decomposition or oxygen deprivation, it's often rendered incapable of many forms of complex brain work. Bringing a dead body back with mind intact is unlikely to the point of impossibility. But revivifying a subject that has remained alive enough to continue to supply oxygen to the brain, even if the brain itself shows no activity and the rest of the body is functionally dead, that is still possible, even if it comes with other hurdles to clear.
Hurdles?
Our life support machines keep oxygen supply to the body's regions, but some respond better than others. The small muscles that coordinate speech and fine motor control, for example. We've managed to revivify Tier 1 workers that can make noise with their throats and operate machinery, but none that can speak or write consistently.
Oh, so that's why you had an array of steel that brainwave reading thing from the production of Freedom in Chains as a way of interfacing directly with the brain to communicate.
A stopgap solution, but yes. In time, we'll find a more direct means of creating speech or communication. This is all a prototype, you have to remember. Once we have time to experiment and refine our process, well, eventually, there will be no discernible difference between the revivified and the living.
Except you'll own the revivified.
And why shouldn't we? Their lives are only possible due to our proprietary processes. They don't need food, only minimal water, inexpensive nutrient pellets, and a power outlet from time to time. Where once there was nothing, now there is life. And that is something we at Dokana have made. And if we made it, isn't it only right that we own it? And if we own it as a corporation, don't we have a responsibility to pursue profit with it?
So you've got no issues with what you're doing? None.
We abide by the law as it is written. No more can be asked of us. The dead, being dead, do not have rights. Nothing is written to suggest that if their death was interrupted, rights would be regranted to them. We've done nothing wrong at all. You see, the living have lives and connections and paperwork, endless paperwork, that suggests they exist. With the dead, those connections have already been severed. There is even paperwork to suggest they no longer exist. Nobody can look for what they have not noticed is missing. And so there is no reason for them to know anything other than that our workforce is automated and proprietary.
Proprietary people.
Proprietary workers. We are not in the business of creating people, Mr. Steele. We at Dokana create workers. All of which is to say that we may not use you for our Life Up project. If we research your background and find that such a clean break can be managed, perhaps.
I couldn't help it. Every time that executive said that, implied for even a second that I wouldn't just die here, that I'd be hooked up to one of their machines and live in whatever eternal worker drone half-life they had cooked up for me. Hell, if I could flip a switch and shut my organs down right then and there, it at least would have been tempting. It's a strange feeling. Realizing that you want to live, but you don't want to live that bad. Stranger, too, because whenever I had a flash of that feeling, the Ruby 7 didn't like it. It was hooked up to my mind just as much as I was hooked up to its. It didn't like my fear, and when it got a whiff of it, it would just soothe itself, I guess. Go back to its happy place. Some of those happy places I recognized.
One more twist, Ruby, and you'll be good as new.
Nice work, Ruby.
Hit it, Ruby. Full power to thrusters. Go!
But then there was the weird stuff. That yearning, reaching feeling. Tinged with nostalgia. No, dripping with it. Saturated with it. That old feeling of loss, like a fall from grace. But the things that the Ruby pointed that feeling towards. Homesickness is what they call the kind of madness that hits you from living in the Outer Rim, right? A natural, instinctive response from your earth-molded body to surroundings it was never meant to see. And I'm just saying that if you could lose your marbles from years of living inside strange fungal structures surrounded by the smell of things wet and ancient, I think you'd go mental in 10 minutes flat visiting the places the Ruby 7 was remembering. Strange, impossible spires tearing into skies filled with gases of colors I'd never seen before. Surfaces at once liquid and solid, pits that boiled with cold steam. Eye-like structures blinking from every corner. But as much as the Ruby's visions horrified me, the feeling it was overwhelmed by was just, well, homesickness. The regular kind, not the debilitating space madness kind. So I was putting the pieces together in the Ruby, too. Slowly. It was from far away. Another galaxy, most likely. And accidentally, or not, it had hitched a ride on an asteroid and ended up in our Milky Way. And, geez, if it was so awful for me to see where it was from, how did our worlds look to it? How long had it lived in the hell of our galaxy, cold and scared and far from home? How much did it love us that it never tried to leave? No, that wasn't quite right. When it first got to the Milky Way, it couldn't have made the trip back on its own. It hadn't even known what a spacecraft was, and it couldn't replicate one if it tried. It had to learn those things. It had to hide among us in a form we wouldn't question, a car. And it had learned from us, sniffed at our emotions, grew its mind to be more like ours. And as its mind grew, its abilities did too. There was a spike in that ability around the time I first showed up, I could feel, when it was parked in the garage of the Oasis Casino Resort. It reached out and found a mind that could reach back, and that had really opened the floodgates. So I stopped thinking about how badly I wanted to avoid the fate that Okana Group was itching to give me. It was just making both of us miserable, and I wasn't going to give those same-faced Okana ghouls the satisfaction. I'd smile all the way to hell if I had to. When I got there, I'd look the devil in the eyes and say, "Name's Juno Steele. Let's see your best shot." Instead, I tried to convince myself that I'd make it out alive and well. That didn't take, especially because on Nureyev's end, things weren't exactly going in my direction.
Mystery Man, wait up. I know you don't like how the vote went, but we have to...
Work together. Yes, I'm aware.
Then you're really going to do it. You're going to leave Juno and, well, slip behind.
I will ensure that you and the surviving people of the Vopolis will escape here alive. You've made it overwhelmingly clear that that is your priority.
And you?
I am my own business. Nobody else's.
I'm sorry, I don't like this any more than you do.
As a general rule, in a situation where an apology will make no material difference, I would rather have no apology at all. Good night, Mele.
Mystery Man.
Good night, Mele.
All of which is to say, it was hard and getting harder to believe I was going to make it. Call me a pessimist if you want, but even after all I've been through, I'm usually pretty sure the glass of milk is half empty, and I also don't even really like milk, so even a half a glass feels like too much. What was easier to dupe myself into believing enough to soothe the Ruby was that it would get to go home again, one day. I didn't know when yet, or how, or even if I was going to be able to help it get there. But sometimes you make a promise because you're willing it into being. Sometimes you hope that if you promise hard enough, you'll make it happen. And no matter what was going to happen to me, I was going to make sure that the ruby got home again. It had done more than enough to earn it. Only thing I had to do was hope these executives would give me enough time to figure out how the hell I was going to do it.
I am pleased to say, Mr. Steele, that the most recent samples we've taken look very promising. With a large enough sample size, we will likely be able to replicate the alien compounds in your bloodstream.
How large are we talking?
I see no reason to leave some to waste, given that we'll be disposing of you and potentially life upgrading you immediately afterwards. We may as well take it all.
Disposing? You make it sound so easy.
It is. Breathe deeply now, Mr. Steele. I have a few more tests to run before the day is out, and I'll need you unconscious for them. But rest assured that the day is coming soon when you will have served your purpose and may be discarded. You should be proud, Mr. Steele. Not everyone can lose their life for the sake of principles as lofty as profit and progress.
You lousy... You get me unstrapped from this stupid table and say that again, you...
Yes, very good. Breathe just like that, Mr. Steele. Just like that.
Go away. Yeah, all right. All right, I'm up. Jeez, just because you can get in my head doesn't mean you get to ring every goddamn alarm bell in there all at once. Been asleep all day, huh? Whatever Fenchin hit me with must have been pretty rough. What the hell is all that noise? Something's going down on your other end. Hell, why didn't you wake me up earlier? Hold on. I think I got it now. Hold on.
Keep pushing! We're almost through the first line of life up workers!
It was all out war. At the front lines, life up workers with short range blasters clashed against Vivopolan survivors with sheet metal shields. Behind the life-up workers stood the executives, a row of them as identical as pawns on a chessboard, holding laser rifles and planting heavy-duty blasts on the line of shields below. But the executives in charge had made the mistake that everyone in charge makes eventually. They let themselves get outnumbered, because even after the Vivopolans' losses in the first life-up worker attack, they still outnumbered the executives 10-1. The life-up workers evened out those numbers a bit, sure, but Melee had an answer for that, too.
We've got a clear line of fire at the lights. Get those boat launchers ready.
With a blast and a big wet splat, a line of Vivopolans with cobbled together cannons on their shoulders sprayed what looked like motor oil and smelled like day-old death all over the life-up workers, the executives, and most importantly, the lights flickering over the life-up workers' heads. It took a minute for everyone to adjust to the sudden darkness, but not me. However this end of the Ruby 7 was seeing everything, it apparently didn't need lights to do it. The executives pawed at their faces and suits, but whatever Tara Melee had cooked up wasn't budging. The life-up drones went slack where they stood, blasters dangling on the ends of loose arms. And the Vivopolans? They pushed. The pseudo-eyes I was seeing out of moved, too. I caught a whiff of strong emotion, and I knew I was with Nureyev. I was riding sidecar with my thief, and I hadn't realized how much I missed being side-by-side with him in the middle of the action. He was angry, and all of it was pouring out at those executives, the men who had stolen 20 years of his life, had stolen his love, had stolen... me. I didn't know whether to cheer or give in. The way the ruby smells emotion, it's not as clear as all that. But there was something resigned in him, too. something that was past hope and in the dark Badlands beyond. By the time I had my focus back enough to follow along again, Nureyev was taking out those executives one by one, and none of him was loving it. It was a cold, mechanical action like harvesting wheat with a scythe, a job that needed to be done, and so he would do it. I don't know whether he was killing them, to be honest. I'm not sure he cared, so long as they couldn't follow him anymore.
Right. Is everyone all right?
Almost everyone made it in. More than I thought we'd get.
And the transport? The lighting system?
Working on the ladder. Cut open that box of wires for me. Perfect. There.
Nicely done, Mayday.
It'll take a minute for the gunk I whipped up to drain off the lights, but once it does, we'll have a squad of life-up workers keeping the executives at bay. Won't hold them forever, but hopefully we don't need that much time.
That all depends on the transport.
Right, let's check it out.
They followed the line of Evoblins through the computer room and into an adjoining spaceport garage. Wherever they were, it must have been close to the surface of the trash droid, and close to leaving me behind for good. I still couldn't sniff out Nureyev's emotions about it. Was he focused, or was he blocking out the unsavory thing he would have to do to save everyone else here? I didn't know.
Melee, we have a problem.
What is it?
The boss has had a transport hauler big enough for all of us, like you said, but we can't get it to start.
What? Show me the engine. That doesn't look good.
Is it reparable?
Hard to tell, and I'm worried it's too late even if I can. Do they have any escape pods or anything like that?
Up against that wall, there's a row of them. About 20, but each one can only hold one person.
And there's way more than 20 of us. Damn! I don't see how we're going to have time for everything. We said we'd find a way to shut down the life support for the last patients. I don't know if I have time to go do that, then come back here and fix the transport, then get out of here all before the bosses...
I'll go shut them down.
Finally, the scent of emotion from Nureyev. He was being deceptive, somehow. Not telling the entire truth. That burning action was revving up in him again, getting ready to blast off, but which way that engine was pointing, I didn't know. Apparently, you didn't need an alien shapeshifter to sniff out what Nureyev was thinking, though. Melee got there, too.
Mystery man, remember what you agreed to. We've got to get everyone out of here. That's what we voted on.
That is what they voted on.
Come on.
And you will be here to ensure they go. We're prioritizing you repairing the transport.
Listen to me. I don't know what you're planning on doing, but I keep my promises. Always. Especially when people are relying on me.
Understood.
I promised those people we'd get out of here alive. So after I fix up this transport, we're getting on it and we're leaving. With or without you.
I hoped you would. May I take my leave now?
Don't get killed, Mystery Man. And I hope you pull off whatever you're trying to do. Really, I do.
Thank you, Mele. Good luck.
That was the last time I'd see Melee. And I wasn't even there for it. And as for Nureyev, had he felt that final goodbye? The weight of it? I couldn't tell. He's a master compartmentalizer, my knight in stolen armor. And he was already on to the next thing, giving off the smoldering smell of burning energy. He didn't know anything about this place. He didn't know where he was going, but he was going there, all right. He was coming. A thrill of hope shook my sternum. He was on his way. And that's when I heard him. Footsteps approaching. Near me, not Nureyev. He was coming, He was on his way. After all this, he wasn't going to leave me behind. It would be me and him again. The door opened and, well, life seemed a lot sunnier before that door opened, I'll say.
Juno Steele, your time is now up. Come with me, please.
No, but it wasn't supposed to be you. It wasn't...
Activating stunner. You'll come with me now, Mr. Steele. This is the end.
I still kept my inner eyes on Nureyev, but I didn't have to. Part of me knew where he'd end up. Even if he hadn't gone there on purpose, of course he'd end up with him. Star-crossed lovers and all that. Fate wouldn't have it any other way.
Slip.
On the wall across from him was strapped Slip Jackson. Thin arms and wasted legs splayed out, an endless writhing nest of cords and cables snaking into him, piercing him. A computer console blinked on a table beside his ghostly pale foot. And on that console were the words, "Begin life upgrade."
If you've enjoyed this tale, please consider supporting The Penumbra. You can do so by buying our merchandise. Just go to thepenumbrapodcast.com and click on the store tab. You can also make a one-time donation to The Penumbra via PayPal at The Penumbra Podcast. Or, if you'd like to keep our stories running in the long term, we hope you will support us on Patreon. Every dollar helps. At just $4 per episode or higher, you will receive ad-free episodes 2 days before the public release. At the $7 level, you will gain access to behind-the-scenes content and production scripts. And at the $10 level, you will receive access to commentary tracks like this one from actor Melody Pereira and co-creators Harley Takagi Kaner and Kevin Vibert.
All right.
This is how I ruined Melody's life over the course of a couple of weeks. This poor actor.
No, no, you didn't. You challenged me, which was good. I just felt like a really crappy actor. Because, like, I don't know why. I don't know why I just couldn't tap in to a normal American accent. I have no idea why. Because, like, usually I can. Because, you know, like, for auditions and stuff, you have to be ready to do things with an American accent. But then for this, some reason, I couldn't.
We would like to give thanks to all who support us on Patreon, but especially to Juno Steele and the Costco Hot Dog. Hi, my name is DJ, and I love this podcast. Jonah Steele, an intrepid lilac. Andy Bell, the Verners waxing poetic about Penumbra perfection. Jules shows up 5 seasons late with Starbucks. Casey O, Juno G, Eska, Bettina Trevino, Alim Muktadir, Brittany Potter, Sophia and Juno Adler, the Emerald Ate This Podcast Ha Ha, the PI The Train and the Knights, Mr. Me, Myself, and I, Nore, Kira, Jack M. Cohen, Girl in the Midnight Sky. Thank you, Penumbra Team, for your amazing work. Braylon, Hannah and Leah's Adventures in Gender Shenanigans. Lady Guinevere is getting their chance. Shelley Schrode, Kevin, please say butts on live recording, thanks. Jammy, Rachel, Osipete, Evett Connie, Diana Cause, Benjamin Fisher, SCP Chloe, Everybody Do the Desert, The Willow is a Dance, Rachel Howard, June Gishoku, Skyfire Forever, The Lady Has Claimed Another One, Jay Hull, James Evelyn, Grateful for Olala, Liv Allen, Alice the Time Lord, In Memory of Spiral Opal, Eden the Gay Bookworm, Michael David Smith, Nicole Page Cundiff and the Save the Baby Alien Brigade, Kiki's Podcast Patronage Service, Caroline Seidman, Radius Ulna, Rain and Pippin from the Glen Dimension, Karen ZH, Genetic, Cortu, Minchowski, Ash, B. Flanagan, and Angel Acevedo for their incredibly generous contributions per episode. Thank you. This tale, Juno Steele and the Thief's Honor, was told by the following people. Joshua Elon as Juno Steele, Noah Symes as Peter Nureyev, Melody Pereira as Melee, and Stuart Evan Smith as the executives. The Penumbra is created and produced by Harley Takagi Kaner and Kevin Vibert. If you wish to know more about the full production team, you can read about them in the show notes of this episode. I'm afraid that is our time for today, dear traveler. We hope you will join us again soon.